Time of Fog and Fire, a Molly Murphy mystery. Written by Reese Bowen and read by Nicola Barber.
Prologue. North Texas, Spring 1895. A fierce wind swept down from the north across the desolate landscape, with nothing to stop it except for the barbed wire fence that had trapped the tumbleweed. He turned his back on it, shielding his eyes from the harsh light as he stared out across flat nothingness.
"Are you sure this is the right spot?" he asked.
"I'm sure."
The other was a man of few words, talking through clenched teeth to keep out the grit and dust in the wind. They stood together, the prospector and the city slicker, saying nothing for a while, staring together at a featureless scrub with not a tree or bush in sight.
"And there's nothing. You're sure there's nothing?"
The other shook his head.
"Not a trace, sorry."
"Then I've been hoodwinked."
The first man spat out the words.
"You and a lot of others, pal."
"He won't get away with this, you know."
"I'd like to bet you he will. Ain't got your big city law out here, pal. That guy is long gone, and I bet he's spending your sweet cash right this minute."
"Not all of it," the man said.
"I wasn't a complete fool. I have ways of finding him, and when I've hunted him down, I'm going to kill him." "Good luck,"
the other said.
"You're going to need it."
The Texan turned and started to walk away, his cowboy boots leaving neat and distinct prints on the dry crust. Chapter 1. New York City, March 1906. It had been an unsettled spring, both in the weather and in my life. We had experienced an early warm spell that encouraged blossoms and narcissus to appear, birds to chirp loudly in mating calls, and New Yorkers to cast off layers of clothing and emerge from hibernation. Even the beggars and crossing sweepers managed a smile and a cheeky reply for the odd coin. Then no sooner than March had come in like a lamb, it turned into a lion, blasting us with frigid winds that stripped blossom from trees, and then with snow that sent us all scuttling indoors again. My own life had been just as unpredictable and unsettled as the weather. We had started the year with Daniel still recovering from a bullet wound, taken as he tried to stop a new and keen recruit from taking on that dreadful new Italian gang called the Cosa Nostra. Daniel had survived, but it had cost the young recruit his life. To make things worse, the current police commissioner did not like Daniel. He and his cronies at Tammany Hall found Daniel too straight for them, not willing to toe the party line, and not open to the occasional bribe. So I suspect they'd been looking for a way to get rid of him, which wasn't easy, as he was one of New York's most respected police captains. But while he was out recovering from a bullet in his shoulder, dark forces had been at work, trying to besmirch his name when he was not around to defend himself. Some unknown source had spread the rumor that Daniel had ordered the young recruit to go and arrest the boss of the Cosa Nostra. A foolhardy move, as he surrounded himself with more bodyguards than the Emperor of China. The truth had been quite the opposite. Daniel had found out what the young man planned to do and rushed after him. Unfortunately, Daniel couldn't stop him in time, and he had been shot and killed. Daniel had taken the second bullet himself, but survived. But now half the police force believed Daniel was to blame. My husband, as responsible and brave a man as you could ever meet, was desperately unhappy about this and unable to set things straight. Now, for the first time, he talked about resigning, about becoming a lawyer or going into politics as his mother had been suggesting. I hated to see him silent and brooding, picking at his meals, hardly noticing his young son. It had almost reached a stage when I was tempted to go down to that police headquarters myself and give them a piece of my mind. Luckily, it didn't come to that, because John Wilkie came back into our lives. As the wife of a police captain, I suppose I should have learned not to be surprised by any unexpected twists of fate. But opening the front door and finding John Wilkie on the doorstep certainly caused my jaw to drop.